Hey, everybody, welcome to Pep Talk, the podcast that gives you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help us God. We take all these crazy, complex health, wellness, and medical conversations, bring them down into bite-sized, chewable, digestible little sections, and help you understand it, give you a little bit of knowledge, and hopefully some wisdom you can take action on to improve your health and the health of your family. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Napudi. I'm going to be taking you down the journey on today's interesting conversation. I'm hearing a tremendous lot about this in the news today, and I want to share some of my thoughts and concerns and et cetera with you today. So many of you know that I'm a big fan of peptides, right? I'm a big fan of peptides. I'm a big fan of vitamins. I'm a big fan of nutrients. I'm a big fan of drinking water. But how many of you know that if you drink too much water, it can pull the minerals out of your body? Or if you drink way too much, you could ultimately drown from it, I suppose, right? Well, the same thing's true with all other good things in life, and peptides are being one of them. Many of you know that over the past couple years, the pharmaceutical industry now has taken over at least part of the peptide industry. And I want you to understand what a peptide is first, then I'm going to get into this conversation. So a peptide is nothing more than a chain of amino acids. Amino acids come from proteins. And when these protein sequences get chained together, these proteins, sequences, amino acids go into the body, into the bloodstream, and they signal to your cells for them to do certain things, to take certain activities. Some of them signal weight loss activities. Some of them signal detox principles. Some of them signal muscle growth and development. There's truly an infinite amount of peptide combinations that could be utilized. And there are a lot of cellular activities that can happen. We don't know all of them yet. And anybody that says that they do is wrong. We just don't yet. And so we know that peptides can be safe if they're used properly and if they're used by the proper physicians. I've used peptides personally, and I've had them used in my practice now for over 20 years. There are safe, easy, affordable, and convenient, effective ways to use peptides. The problem is that the pharmaceutical industry, which, by the way, I want to remind everyone that the organizations on the planet who have paid the largest amount in civil and criminal penalties are the pharmaceutical industries. They're not always the easily most trusted organizations that are out there. At least if you know where they've come from, it's harder to trust what they're doing. So whenever the pharmaceutical industry took what are known as research peptides, which is nothing more than a category of peptides that are not used for drugs and peptides that are not called supplemental or nutritional peptides, it's that between group called research peptides. When they took the research peptide, semaglutide, and they manipulated the molecule and the delivery process a little bit, they made something called Ozempic. You probably heard of Ozempic, tirzepatide, Wegovy, all those things. Well, the pharmaceutical industry now used those for diabetes. Now they're being used off-label for weight loss. And I will tell you that obesity, which is literally the pandemic that's killing every man, woman, and child on this planet, and the solutions aren't just taking more drugs, more peptides, or more supplements. The solution is really getting to the root cause of the problem, which we can discuss on other podcasts. But when the pharmaceutical industry manipulated the molecules within semaglutide and made the research peptide semaglutide now a pharmaceutical drug that is supposed to be for diabetes and now is getting off-use label for weight loss, we're seeing the good, the bad, the ugly, and the oh my God that's happening with this thing. And what's sad is that most people are uneducated on the truth of this. So what I want to do is I want to shine a little bit of light on Ozempic. And I want you to understand what it is and how it works and the health issues and everything that are related to this. And first of all, I want you to understand that semaglutide stimulates something called the GLP-1 agonist. So GLP-1, when you stimulate that, it causes our body to feel full faster. It causes a physiological response in the body to burn its stored fat and ultimately, unfortunately, to burn off protein in a lot of cases with people, which is why one of the side effects of taking semaglutide at high doses or Ozempic is you're going to lose muscle mass, which we all know from the longevity studies is a problem. Because the more muscle mass that we have, period, the healthier we are as individuals, but especially going into our, 50 plus years of life. So I want you to understand, by the way, there are other things that can stimulate GLP-1 that's a GLP-1 agonist, like fasting stimulates GLP-1. Berberine stimulates GLP-1. There are other natural herbs and nutrients and lifestyle changes that people can do. It doesn't have to be a drug. And these drugs all have side effects. And that's what I want you to understand. So let's talk a little bit about Ozempic. And so for the most part, the food in America comes from, well, just a few crops like corn and wheat and soy and canola. And it's largely due to the subsidies in farming we have today. This is a problematic issue. Why? Because the food we eat today is more chemical than it is calories. And we have a chemical problem, not a calorie problem, as much as people would think. We get health issues from our standard American diet. These foods are unhealthy. They contribute to major health problems like diabetes, obesity, and other chronic illnesses. They're addictive, by the way, just so you understand. Most of the foods that are made in the Western diet or the standard American diet are addictive by nature. In fact, Philip Morris, the tobacco company, bought out one of the largest food manufacturing companies decades ago. And those same scientists who figured out how to make cigarettes and tobacco addictive have now figured out how to make food addictive. And yes, folks, it's legal, according to the FDA, for scientists to manipulate our food to make it more addictive. And yes, some of those addictive chemicals definitely are carcinogens. We know that for a fact. Some of them are hormone disruptors. They messed up our hormones and they cause us to gain weight, be toxic, and have chronic illnesses. Our food is literally killing us. That's why if you travel to other parts of the world, when I go to Europe and I go to the Middle East and to Asia, when I eat breads or pastas or rice or barley or whatever, I don't get swollen. I don't feel sick. I lose weight, not gain weight. Why? Because our own United States government, through the FDA, through lobbyists and paying off certain people, have allowed certain chemical compounds in our food supply that are illegal to have in other regions of the world. So we become addicted to those things. And when you become addicted to it, that's where the cascade starts of serious problems with obesity, cravings of foods. That's when we get these problems of not feeling full. And that's also why when you eat certain meals, how many of you have ever had an exposure to, let's say you went to a Chinese buffet, and in the Chinese buffet, they have MSG and other types of additives that cause us to crave the food. Well, how many of you have just gone to one of those places and maybe overindulged? And then like 2 hours later, you're starving again. Why is that? It's because of the chemicals they put in there. Those chemicals downregulate the ability of our body to feel full. So what happens is we need to stimulate those chemicals in our body to make us feel full, to have ghrelin and leptin and all those things in our system function proper because those compounds disrupt our hormones. Well, GLP-1 agonists do that. That's why a lot of people, when they take semaglutide, they feel full. They're not hungry. The problem is, well, what's going on with Ozempic? So for years, people like myself and other wellness experts have really pushed for awareness of the importance of eating clean, natural foods, eating organic foods. And we really need to change the way that we're subsidizing our farms. And we got to promote healthy living and healthy eating. The media is just all over things they shouldn't be all over. And we need to have common sense conversations about what's really going on. I don't know if you saw this. I want to give you an example. A few weeks ago, shortly after gaining the national spotlight and the need to make Americans healthy again by freeing people from persuasive regulatory consumption, Bobby Kennedy Jr. He went on to international news station to discuss the dangers of seed oils and artificial food coloring with the newscasters on there. And this is something we've never seen on national media before. And we're starting to see it now. Why? First of all, you and I have more engagement on social media than these national news outlets do. You know, MSNBC, CNN, and even Fox News have lost massive amounts of supporters. We have social media podcasters and influencers that are reaching, you know, millions and tens of millions of people every day. And the news media sometimes is barely reaching half a million per day. It's really, the times have changed. Things have shifted massively, which is why you're seeing so much censorship, by the way. Because whoever can control the message can control the outcome of how their products are bought and sold. So don't forget that. And you need to understand that pharmaceutical sales are a big part of what we're discussing. You know, every now and then we get glued to the television screens because we see clues behind the scenes that the pharmaceutical industries, which I will tell you in most cases are truly sociopaths. They're just sociopathic sales forces. Their culture is all about, you know, sell, sell, sell. And if people aren't, well, benefiting, then so be it. I mean, look at Pfizer, for example, and other pharmaceutical industries that have lost billions of dollars in class action lawsuits because they either lied to doctors, misinformed consumers, or did something that was completely illegal. And let's say that they had a product that was on the market that made $8 or $9 billion. And then they had to pay a class action lawsuit for $2 billion. Well, $2 billion minus $10 billion is still $8 billion in profit that they made. And truly, it's the cost of doing business for these folks because no one's ever punished them before. Every time a drug comes out to be wrong, which, by the way, please understand that every single drug that was pulled off the market was also one time approved by the FDA. And so no one's gone to jail. There's nobody that's being enforced. They're paying fines. But there's no incentive to not do the right thing, which is just disgusting in our system. Last year, a pharmaceutical safety advocate tipped a media enterprise off about J.P. Morgan's annual healthcare conference, where a private invitation event only, described by J.P. Morgan as the industry's biggest gathering. It was the 41st conference, and it was from January 9th to the 12th of last year. It was the first event hosted in person, by the way, since the pandemic by these folks. And given this event's immense influence in the pharmaceutical sector, it was really quite disgusting the things that they talked about. And they really were pushing the need for GLP-1 medication sales. And if you look, I'm looking at the chart right now, from 2020 until 2030, they've got the projections going right now for GLP-1 medications. And I'm going to tell you the good, the bad, the ugly in a minute. So those of you that are on Ozempic or on Tirzepatide, don't get your panties in a bundle just yet. There are things that you can do, and it is about the dosing that you take. Because I'm a fan of peptides. I'm just not a fan of the dosing that's happening right now. Look at this. In 2020, there was $5 billion in sales that was done for GLP-1 sales by pharmaceutical industries. Here we are now in 2024, $17.3 billion per year is being spent. The estimation is by 2030 that $50.9 billion per year is going to be spent on GLP-1 agonist from a pharmaceutical standpoint over time. Now, I want you to understand something. There are natural ways to stimulate GLP-1. There are natural ways to get a balance in your body's feeling full and feeling hungry. Do you think that the pharmaceutical industry is going to allow for natural practitioners and other individuals that have safe, affordable, natural, convenient solutions to bring their products and services to the market? And the answer is no. Not when they're projecting a $50 billion a year annual market for GLP-1 agonist medications. I mean, these are things like Wegovy, Mounjaro, Ozempic, etc. So what I want you to understand is, and I originally talked about this conference months ago, and parts of what I talked about were deleted because, you know, one of the keynote speakers, which was Dr. Khalif, who is the commissioner of the FDA, comes up and talks about the immense pharmaceutical conflicts of interest, which is interesting. Conflict of influence for him to come up there as the director of the FDA and promote and push these drugs. So the gentleman who is in charge of the Food and Drug Administration, our safety, is promoting the use of these GLP medications. He's supposed to be like Switzerland. And for those of you that are from Switzerland watching, I'm not trying to compare you to the FDA. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. But they're supposed to be neutral. And they're supposed to base their decision not off of how much money goes into their lobbying organizations, but by science, data, and by what the market is driving. I think it's important to understand is that the rise of Ozempic, you know, once we saw this conference, given that it set the course for the entire industry, started going literally crazy with sales of Ozempic afterwards. I was convinced that Ozempic was soon going to be aggressively marketed, and it was. It absolutely was. In fact, the FDA backed the expansion of its use, and this predicted widely the reality of what's happening and happened then with widespread promotion and endorsement of, well, drugs that reminded me of the opioid pandemic that happened. Do you remember whenever the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma came out and said, hey, opioids are not addictive. Opioids aren't going to cause problems. Opioids are safe. Well, those were all lies. And yes, that organization paid billions of dollars in fines, but they profited tens of billions of dollars. And yes, some of the individuals did do a little bit of jail time, but there's no incentive for this to stop. So I'm telling you, we're going to see a very similar rise with certain types of drugs that are peptides in the same way that, unfortunately, the opioid crisis was. Now, sadly, here's the deal. The campaign has been so successful that there's now a shortage of Ozempic. I don't know if you've seen this. It really driving people to seek alternatives, which I think is great, other than the fact that there are safe, affordable, and convenient natural alternatives out there to Ozempic, but the powers that be aren't letting those individuals speak freely about that. We get censored every time we try to have these conversations. In fact, look at this. The push to expand Ozempic markets has targeted various demographic groups. Number one being, look at what they're going after with the African-American group. Ozempic's manufacturing paid civil rights groups to lobby for the drug, framing any opposition as, well, systemic racism to Ozempic. What about children? The FDA approved semaglutide for obese children 12 and older just before that conference, the J.P. Morgan Chase conference I was telling you about, despite concerns that long-term effects of that medication. Well, here's what we're finding. By the way, the American Academy of Pediatrics published a set of authoritative guidelines for treating childhood obesity, which strongly endorses now giving them GLP-1 medications. How about we change their food supply? How about we get their gut bacteria right? How about we get them having the right vitamins and minerals and they won't crave the junk food anymore? Folks, we're treating the symptoms and not the cause of the problem. And here's another group, the elderly. One major obstacle to selling Ozempic is its high cost. It's between $1,000 and $1,500 a month for these medications. By the way, making it unaffordable without insurance. Now, did you know that we're seeing the vast majority of Medicare expenditure starting to shift towards Ozempic and other semaglutide medications? Some people might say, well, that's great. Well, the reality is that the long-term data shows a 75% rebound effect. 75% of people who get on these types of medications, when they get off of them, either go back to their original weight or they gain more weight afterwards. Why? Because lifestyle recommendations and changes were not met. People need to understand how to eat for their body type, their lifestyle, their genetic makeup. That's not happening. They're not taking the time necessary to educate people, inspire them, and motivate them on what they should be doing. They're simply giving this drug. In fact, an obesity rights coalition, by the way, founded by the Ozempic manufacturer, the people who are selling the drug founded a coalition called the Obesity Rights Coalition, has successfully advanced laws now allowing Medicare to cover, which is going to cost between $3 and $6 billion annually. $3 and $6 billion annually, the cost is going to be for Medicare to cover these things, when there's other more cost-effective solutions that are out there. And now we're seeing the rise and fall of certain medications. Did you know that there are some potential risk and benefits for Ozempic we need to discuss? By the way, those of you that have ever used Ozempic or Wegovy or tirzepatide, you're supposed to have what's called informed consent. Informed consent is what every doctor by law is supposed to do to you. They say, here's your risk, here's your benefit. You make the decision if this is right for you to do. Prior to the GLP-1s being marketed as an obesity drug, by the way, many of my colleagues, including myself, believe that they were quite helpful for diabetes. Given that some of these medications, and by the way, some of my colleagues are very conservative in the recommendations that they'll make, these medications now, we're starting to notice that we're repeatedly seeing patients that are developing gastrointestinal complications from the drug, including hospitalizations. That's happening quite a bit. After starting these medications, we're seeing weight loss thing happen, yes, for sure, but we're also seeing other problems. You're hearing about the Ozempic face that's going through Hollywood right now, where we're seeing the hollowed out appearance of the face. We're seeing the sunken in around the eyes, and we're seeing much more lines and wrinkles, and we're seeing skin loosen up. But there are worse side effects than that as well. Have you heard about the pancreatitis and the pancreatic issues that are happening, the blindness that's happening, the issues that we're seeing with certain types of inflammatory conditions happening in the bowel? We just need to make sure that the juice is worth the squeeze. And we're seeing a 9-time greater risk of pancreatitis, a 4.2-time, listen to this, greater risk of bowel obstruction. We're seeing a 3.4-time greater risk of gastroparesis, which means that you can barely eat because the stomach is constantly full. And I know that's one of the most common side effects that I'm seeing with people. We're seeing that 48% of individuals are having some type of adverse event with these medications, everything from nausea, diarrhea, fatigue, acid reflux, headaches, abdominal pain, and constipation. And then we're seeing a lot of severe adverse effects, headaches, back pain. We're seeing a lot of back pain with people because it's affecting negatively the kidneys. And when the kidneys get affected, we're seeing the back have pain as well. We're seeing liver disorders, pancreatitis, cardiovascular disease in 17% of the individuals. We're seeing everything from increased risk of actually flus and colds because it's causing immune dysregulation in individuals. And we're seeing psychiatric disorders in 17% of the population that's being studied. So what I want you to understand is this. I want you to understand the risk versus the benefits. I also want you to understand that, there are other concerns. There's a major issue with Ozempic is that since it slows the rate at which the stomach empties, it's going to cause issues with the bacteria in the GI tract. It alters and delays absorption of nutrients, foods, and even certain medications people take. And we're seeing a lot of doctors, conventional doctors, even saying, hey, I'm treating my patients with SSRI medications and they're not being absorbed because of the Ozempic. And it's causing a problem with our patients. We're seeing an increased risk in suicide. Look at this. There was a study that was just done. They found that Ozempic caused a 45% increased risk for suicidal ideations, which is thoughts about it. And that's that increased by 345% in those who were already taking SSRI medications. That's a pretty big deal for you to understand. I mean, I understand why doctors are excited about it because they don't have a tool to help their patients flip the script when it comes to feeling full, to changing their diet and lifestyle. If doctors actually did what doctor means, doctor's Latin for teacher, they could teach, reach, inspire, and motivate their patients to take the right action steps and do the right things. But doctors don't do that. They're not trained by that. They don't know there's another solution. In fact, you got to understand that most doctors that you're seeing only have about 5 to 6 hours of clinical nutritional training period. I mean, most of you have more experience in nutrition and eating right foods, et cetera, than your doctors do. They're trained in drugs, in surgery and managing disease. I'm not interested in that. Most of you probably aren't either. If you are, then there you go. But the conclusion is the Ozempic story is, it's pretty egregious because they took a good thing, which is semaglutide, a peptide that has been safe and proven effective. And it's very convenient to use if you microdose it properly, little bitty dosages on a regular basis, micrograms, not milligrams. But I want you to understand this illustrates the fact that most healthcare professionals don't appreciate the fact that medical guidelines are largely a product of, well, economic considerations. It's one of the reasons why peptides are so big right now in the marketplace, because the community, the globe is driving it, but most people don't understand them. And most people don't understand the side effects that can happen with them. I just want you to understand that there are things that you can do to help get GLP-1 agonist working in the body. Berberine, cinnamon, curcumin, having methylated B vitamins, having the right microflora bacteria in your body, eating based upon your metabolic profile, which is your body type, your blood type, and your genetic profile. Eating fermented foods, having the right microflora, having certain low dose micro doses of peptides in your system are very powerful. Eating a high protein type diet, whether it's high protein from animals like a carnivore diet or it's high protein from vegetables. We know that a high protein diet is also very similar to a GLP-1 agonist. There are many things that can be done, but because people don't have the knowledge, they don't have the wisdom, which is learning how to take that knowledge and apply it to your life. So if anything, I hope that this podcast helps you question things, because the quality of your life is in direct proportion to the quality of the questions that you ask yourself and you ask other people. Am I against drugs? No. Am I against peptides? Absolutely not. I recommend them and prescribe them for my patients, and I take them myself, but I do it in the proper dosages. I use microdosing. I use it in conjunction with other vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and the lifestyle that I should live, because that's the key. That's what's going to help thwart off the fact that 75% of people, once they get off these GLP-1 agonist drugs, rebound and have all these side effects. So folks, I hope you learned something from this. I hope this challenged your thinking just a little bit. There's more than one ways to proverbially skin a cat, and this is not the best way to do it. And I promise you, we're already seeing the class action lawsuits come out for Ozempic and Wegovy and Tirzepatide and these other high-dose prescription medications for peptides. And I'm telling you, the pharmaceutical industry is doing that more and more with research peptides. They're studying them for their pharmaceutical use. They're taking something that could be safe and effective and over-prescribing, overdosing, and unfortunately causing ultimate damage and dysregulation to your cells and your genetic expression in your body. So I want you to think about all this. Go back and share this this podcast with your friends and family. Make sure that you go to our website. Go to peptalk.world. That's peptalk.world. Like and subscribe. Share this on all your social media platforms. And if you have questions, remember, go on our site, ask those questions, and I'll answer those questions live on podcast for you. And folks, remember, knowledge is power, but wisdom is taking that knowledge and applying it to your life. So until we meet again, I'm Dr. Eric Napudi. God bless you, God bless America, and God bless the world. We'll see you next time. Have an amazing day. Be well.